With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are 13 weeks in to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, joined alongside, as always, by Fran Duffy. And I know you're getting sad. It's that time of year where the college football slate starts to dwindle down.
Yep.
You're focusing on the big matchup. It's conference championship weekend coming up. You know, it was sort of like elimination. It was almost like a precursor round, like a opening round, preliminaries this week.
Yeah, and then this almost served as like a this coming weekend almost serves as a play-in weekend for the playoff. But the full slate of college football Saturdays has come to an end, which is very, very sad to see.
Well, what are you going to do with your Saturdays, Fran? You got to spend time with your wife and your dog.
I mean, I did that. Actually, I did that this week. But, you know, it is what it is.
So, the college football playoff picture starting to get clearer right now. Entering this past weekend, Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Iowa were the top four teams. Three of them have conference title games ahead of them. The one that does not is Oklahoma, no Big 12 title game. And then the number five team coming into the week, we don't know by this point. We're recording on Monday afternoon, so we don't have the updated CFP standings. But the number five team coming into the week was Michigan State. And guess what? They have Iowa in the Big Ten Championship. So certainly if they win, they should be in.
They have a chance. Yeah, good chance.
Do you envision any odd scenario where an Ohio State or someone who's on the outside looking in? I mean, the big thing is Notre Dame lost, Baylor lost. You know, a couple of those teams that Michigan, teams that might have had a slim chance, kind of got knocked on to the wayside.
Yeah, I think in order for that to happen, you would need both. And you would need both of these to happen. You would need Stanford to lose to USC, and you would need Florida to beat Alabama. if you had both of those things happen, then you're just creating chaos at that point. You know Oklahoma's in. You would assume that Clemson beats North Carolina. And again, that's where you can kind of get in. Okay, well, if North Carolina wins too, now you're just really
messing
this picture.
Because
now you're opening the door for all one-loss teams. So, look, it's going to be a big weekend for college football, and we'll see how things shake out.
All right, so we're going to start things off this week with our Draft Buzz segment. Some players declaring that they are going to leave college for the NFL. Also, some All-Star Game invitations. We'll look at Fran's Saturday Scouting column. And a little bit later, pick six, and it's going to be six players who will be featured in this conference championship weekend. And, of course, last but certainly not least, your draft mailbag. So we're going to kick things off with a little draft buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, for this week's edition of Draft Buzz, we'll start with Fran's Saturday Scouting column.
Yes.
And unfortunately, don't really want to delve into this game. Stanford, Notre Dame.
Yes, very tough loss for you guys.
You know, I can't even say me guys. Not like I went to school. I went to Drexel. There's no football team. I grew up like in Notre Dame. That's
most,
the backstory.
Most Notre Dame fans are that way.
That's exactly. So, almost sort of being like a cockroach fan too.
Almost.
To an extent.
Yeah. I didn't want to go there. I
understand it. I understand it. Hey, growing up, look, Rutgers was nothing. Yeah, that's I'm like trying to think of other.
I let you off the hook. It's all right.
Nonetheless, phenomenal game, except for the end result. But the matchup you were looking at in particular really actually didn't take place because CJ Procise was not able to play.
He was up in the air going in because he had missed 2 weeks ago against Wake, and then he came back against Boston College, which has one of the best run defenses in the league, and he was able to kind of tough that out. Knew he was banged up, so I knew there was a chance that he couldn't play, but still felt the need to talk about him because there's a lot of buzz about Procise.
Certainly. So you were looking in particular the matchup with Blake Martinez, the Cardinal linebacker. So if you want to delve into Procise's game first and foremost, how do you think that it's that Notre Dame backfield has been so crazy where they're down to their number three running back now
the
season.
And that's what's funny is that with you know, coming into the year, everyone was focused on Falston, Torian Falston, who ended up tearing his ACL over the summer. So now you've got Procise, who was a converted wide receiver, long legs, kind of raw in terms of his running ability, but really explosive, has great top end speed, has the ability to make people miss, just a really phenomenal athlete. They flex him out and play him in the slot. He can run routes as a wide receiver. They can do all different kinds of things with him. The question I saw in person at Temple, and then also going back and watching these guys, when things aren't clear for him in the pocket, you know, not in the pocket, but when things aren't clear for him, when he's approaching the line of scrimmage, he tends to stutter his feet. He can sometimes will stop his feet outright. You can't do that in the NFL. You're not going to get away with doing that. It's an issue we talked about often last year with Melvin Gordon, and that has continued to plague him so far his rookie season with the San Diego Chargers. So that'll be an interesting thing to see how far, you know, that hurts ProSize. But I've heard some people think ProSize could go in the top 40 picks. I mean, he's got legit athleticism. So very interesting to see how this all pans out for him. Still has another year of eligibility, so he could decide even to go back since he's only got 1 year of running back under his belt. But that's where you got with ProSize. Really dynamic athlete. Just needs to refine some things, especially in terms of his vision, his decisiveness when he's hitting the hole.
The Eagles part of me doesn't want to see another running back, you know, turned offensive weapon like Theo Riddick.
Yeah, yeah, and that's
like what we saw on Thanksgiving.
It's interesting is that, you know, he's obviously got that type of skill set. I would say he's probably, you know, Riddick is more quick than he is fast.
Yes.
This guy's much more explosive. And this, he's, you know, look, ProSize is quick too, but he's much more straight line explosive with the ability to get downhill quickly.
And what's the story on Blake Martinez?
You know, Martinez, a lot of people talked about him as one of the top senior linebackers coming into the year. And you know, you think Stanford, middle linebacker, and you kind of have an image of your mind, okay, he's probably, you know, X, Y, and Z. And so I kind of knew, you know, what I thought. I had a preconceived notion of what to expect, instinctive, tough, physical, you know, a good blitzer. And he is a very good blitzer, times it very well, hits it up inside, hits it with physicality, and he's not afraid to come downhill. My questions with him, and this is something that I want to see more of as I watch him from this year and then getting a chance to see him down at the Senior Bowl in January. He didn't come off to me as a great athlete, and I thought that he was a step slow seeing things as a junior. So the instincts will be a question for me moving forward, and I do want to watch more from this year and see if that's an area where he did improve, and then also the athleticism. Those were the big questions with me coming into the year.
All right, the next Saturday scouting matchup. Speaking of Rutgers, Maryland, you wanted to feature Leonte Carew, who accepted an invite to the Senior Bowl, so you'll get to see him in Mobile, Alabama.
Yep.
He went against the Terps cornerback duo that featured Sean Davis. Carew finished with 7 catches for 183 yards and a touchdown. Should be noted that Sean Davis did have an interception in the 46-41 Terps victory.
Yeah, and Davis, I'll start with the Maryland corners. You know, Davis has always intrigued me, and I've been a big fan of his ever since the summer. Was a safety a year ago as a junior, midway through the year, actually about three quarters of the way through the year, made the switch to corner. It was against Penn State. They slid him down to corner because they had some injuries there. And I thought that he showed pretty well. And then he stayed there through the offseason. Everything I had heard out of Maryland was that he had had a great spring and was going to come out in a big way his senior year. And I know that some people had kind of softened on him a little bit, that he didn't have a great start to the season. But anytime I've watched him, I see a big kid who's physical, knows how to disrupt early in the down, has the ability to run with receivers downfield. He's got good speed. The way I've always looked at Davis, and there are a couple guys that fit this description that are in this senior class, and we're going to talk about these guys moving forward, is you either have a really tall, long corner that has the ability to disrupt and it can, you know, do all the different things that you want at the line of scrimmage in terms of pressing, or you have a safety who has cover skills. So, you know, one of those two things are going to make him a hot commodity on draft day. However you see him, he's going to get drafted relatively high. So I like Sean Davis and what he can bring to the table. So I'm excited to see him down in Mobile. And then Will Likely, who, look, all these juniors, as is the case with all these schools that have undergone a coaching change, you know, anytime you have a coaching change, you're more likely to see juniors start to declare. We'll see what happens with Likely. Very, very talented, has been extremely productive throughout his career in Maryland, especially as a returner. I put in the column, he's had double digit return touchdowns, you know, during his career in 3 years. It's just remarkable. His problem is his size. He's 5'7", you know, 170 pounds soaking wet. So we'll see what happens with Likely. But Carew is a guy that some people are really high on. And I'm going to be honest, every time I've watched him, I've been left wanting a little bit more. I think that he runs pretty good routes. I think he's got solid hands. there were some questions that I had coming into the year in terms of his toughness over the middle, his ability to take a hit in the middle of the field and work the middle, because I think he is more of a slot receiver type. I don't see him as a dynamic athlete, although they feed him the ball, and he has been very, very productive when he's been on the field. He's faced some injury issues, as well as he got suspended for an off-the-field incident. It was actually the details of it that were alleged were pretty ugly, so we'll see what happens there with that and how that affects his draft status.
All right, so we'll likely see?
Will likely.
Come on.
You know you like that. Yeah, I mean,
I did enjoy it, yes. Next matchup here, you want it to Alabama-Auburn featuring tight end O.J. Howard.
Yes.
You know, reading the stories leading up to the game, Auburn was truly concerned that even though he's not been productive really from a numbers standpoint, that he is the matchup nightmare in that Crimson Tide offense.
Yeah, I mean, you have O.J. Howard and Kenyon Drake. And I remember coming into the year back in August, I remember presenting the question actually to Brian Thomas on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. And he talked about Amari Cooper and all the targets that he got in that Alabama offense a year ago. Someone was going to have to take those targets away. And, you know, they didn't have any established veteran receivers yet at that point. And some of those guys have continued to step up throughout the season here. But Kenyon Drake, who was a versatile running back that can do all kinds of things out of the backfield as a receiver, he's a big matchup nightmare. And O.J. Howard, who you know, he had a big freshman year. They've really counted on him as a blocker, and he's been a starter for them, but hasn't been a featured weapon in the passing game. And I think that's continued throughout most of the year. He still has not put up huge numbers, but at any point, that kid is able to, you know, take it to the house for a 70-yard touchdown. I mean, he showed it his true freshman year, and he's flashed it throughout his career. So I'll be interested to see what happens with Howard if he decides to come out or if he wants to stay at Alabama for one more year. But he's got the ability to be a total package because he's really come along as a blocker, and his receiving skill is also very high. I think that he's had some issues with drops throughout his career. I saw a lot of double catches as a sophomore. Hopefully that's not the case this year. We'll see if he took the next step there. But he's got the ability to be a total package.
In this Iron Bowl showdown, you wanted to spotlight Auburn safety Blake Countess. What's the scouting report on Blake?
So Countess transferred. He was at Michigan and was a contributor there for the past few years. Ended up transferring after Harbaugh got there and ended up at Auburn. Undersized for a corner, and he actually ended up playing safety. Now he's been like kind of a free safety, play a little bit in the slot. They move him all over the field. And I think that he showed pretty well in the games that I've watched. I mean, you're talking about a safety with cover skills, and those guys are always held in pretty high regard throughout the draft process. So I'm interested to watch more, but Countess, he's undersized, and that's going to be one of the big things. I think he's listed 5'9", 5'10". So, you know, we'll see and ultimately what he is. But if you've got a guy that can play safety and play nickel, I think, you know, some teams are going to look at that in pretty high regard.
All right, your last Saturday scouting matchup featured Ohio State and Michigan. Now, the Buckeyes absolutely destroyed the Wolverines 42-13. Ezekiel Elliott had over 200 yards on the ground, 214 to be exact, and two touchdowns on 30 carries after he criticized the game plan in the loss to Michigan State. But paving the way for Elliott, Ohio State offensive lineman Pat Elflein going against Michigan defensive lineman Willie Henry.
Yeah, and there were some interesting vines that I saw on social media this past week of Pat Elflein just destroying people at the second level. Every time I've watched him, you know, he's just come off as this guy who's really, really tough. He's got deceptive athleticism, but he's got the ability to move people at the line of scrimmage. I like Elflein. I think he might be my favorite lineman on this Ohio State team. A lot of people really like Taylor Decker, the left tackle. I think that Decker's a nice player. I'm not ready to go all in on him as a potential top 20 pick yet. So I do want to see more from Decker. He is a senior. I'm assuming he's going to be at the Senior Bowl. We shall see. But Elflein, who's a junior and who could declare, I think he would be one of the top interior linemen if he were to come out.
What about Willie Henry?
Willie Henry intrigued me too. And he's a redshirt junior, so he's got another year of eligibility. But I want to say he's 6'4", 305 pounds, 310 pounds. He's got good size. Really impressed me with his movement skills, the ability to play up and down the line of scrimmage. He plays sideline to sideline. They do a lot of different things with him, almost kind of like what you'll see with Fletcher Cox here in Philadelphia, where, you know, sometimes he'll be lined up as a three technique, sometimes as a five, sometimes as a two-point stance coming off the edge. I mean, they do all kinds of different things with him, move him all around the formation. It's a pro-style defense, so a lot of different things you see are easily translatable to the next level, especially if you've got a creative defensive coordinator. I think Henry's intriguing because he's got that athleticism with that size.
All right, Fran, so it's fitting here on the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA that we, you know, being in the city of brotherly love, have some declarations.
Oh, yes.
To the next level. Maybe not, maybe I guess you would say of independence, because they are leaving the college ranks, and
that's true.
Hopefully will be drafted, even though you're not really independent going in draft, but you know, hope to be selected at the next level. And two players in particular here. One, you actually already commented on Twitter at FDuffy3 about Georgia edge rusher Leonard Floyd.
Every time I have watched Leonard Floyd, he has been outstanding. He is, and I can't believe how few, like, so many people have kind of written him off and said, oh, he's a linebacker because they moved him inside the linebacker this year, because they had an embarrassment of riches on the outside and they felt he could be an inside linebacker. He's an edge player. I mean, when they go to nickel, when they go to sub packages, he's rushing the passer off the corner. They do so many different things with him. And the cool thing is when you watch him, since he has a different role this year, you see him so often now in coverage. And he's running down the seam with slot receivers and breaking up passes 25 yards down the field against Vanderbilt. Just an unbelievable athlete for the position. Does he need to get, probably needs to add a little bit of weight, especially depending on what kind of scheme he goes into at the next level. But a guy who's got the flexibility to turn the corner, he shows the ability to counter once he's initially blocked. He gives effort against the run. He's a high motor guy. I really, really like Leonard Floyd, a guy that's going to be, to me, a first round pick for sure. And he should be one of the one or two top edge players taken in the draft.
Producer Brian Thomas offered his approval.
Shaking his head furiously
in the background. Certainly. So the you know, the underrated scout here on
That's
the program,
right.
The one who knows it all. So, and BT's going to chime
in. Here's my hot take.
All right, here you go. Let's go.
He's really good.
I think that's a pretty good hot take.
The guy's number 84, and he flashes.
He does.
He flashes. I remember talking about him a couple years ago, and guy moves off the edge.
That's right, because he really made waves in his true freshman year, and now I just watching him develop. I mean, he is a remarkable athlete, and he had a fumble recovery for a touchdown or a pick six earlier in the year where he just outraced the entire offense. I mean, he's got unreal athleticism. I am a big fan of this kid.
Do you agree he needs to fill out a little bit?
Just kind of definitely.
His body needs to become a professional body. But from a skills standpoint, I mean, he can rush the passer.
No question. I mean, look, I liked Randy Gregory last year. I thought there were a lot of things to like. I like watching Leonard Floyd more. I enjoy watching Leonard Floyd more than I liked watching Randy Gregory a year ago.
Interesting.
And he was, a lot of people thought, was a top five potential pick. So I'm interested to see how this narrative changes with Leonard Floyd, if it does at all.
Well, the thing is, Gregory had off the field issues.
No question. And that's why he fell. Sure, absolutely. So we'll see. I'm a big, big fan of Leonard Floyd.
Second player to declare, Oregon wide receiver / running back, Byron Marshall.
Yes, and it's interesting because he's played a number of different positions for them, and they use him in a lot of different ways. The question that I had coming into the year was that you have a guy who has had ball security issues in college. I know fumbles were an issue for him. I didn't think that he was a really natural runner in terms of his instincts and his patience as a runner, approaching the line of scrimmage. And so that was one thing that kind of gave me pause. Okay, maybe he's not a full-time back. But then when I watched him as a receiver, there were a good amount of drops. I didn't think he was a great route runner. So now your question is, okay, well, if he doesn't have great hands and he's not a great route runner, and he's also not really the most instinctive runner, and he's had issues with ball security.
What is he?
Yeah. So ultimately, I think he can be a gadget type guy. I think he can be a guy that can he be Ted Ginn? Can he be one of these guys that you can move all? DeAnthony Thomas and how they use him in Kansas City. That will be the, so testing will be a big part of, if he can go out and run, in the high 4.3s and have a great, three cone and things like that. Now you're kind of raising your stock that way. I'll be interested to see what happens with Marshall.
All right. So what we're going to do now is go through some of the top 25 results from, over the weekend. And Fran, if there's any prospects you want to note, you can feel free to go ahead.
I'll jump right in.
These are just games involving where both teams were ranked in the top 25. First one, we mentioned Baylor dropping in the college football playoff rankings. Their hopes have been diminished, and that's thanks to a 28-21 double overtime loss to TCU. Nasty, nasty weather conditions, but battling through an ankle injury, quarterback Trevone Boykin threw an 8-yard touchdown pass for the game-winning score.
Yeah, and these two teams are just so tough, and I'll be interested to see how the Big 12 decides to take this moving forward, particularly when you have a team like Baylor, a team like TCU. So really it doesn't come down to the Big 12. It's more those individual schools because you look at Oklahoma and their out-of-conference schedule has been habitually much more competitive
than those two schools. And, you know, you have the SEC battle yearly now with them in Tennessee, and they've also always set up some other different rivalry games where, you know, you're going to see them go up against a different high-level competition, whereas, you know, the best team between Baylor and TCU combined, the best team that they faced is Minnesota all year outside of conference. So we'll see how that changes for them and how much that will affect the college football playoff rankings for them moving forward. But, you know, Corey Coleman is obviously the guy that everyone talks about. He hasn't made any mention of whether or not he's going to stay in school or whether he's going to come out. I think that if you're a Baylor player right now, you got to be thinking, hey, next year Seth Russell's going to come back healthy. If Corey Coleman comes back, you know, we're going to be in position for a title run. They're going to lose Shaq Linwood, who's their runner and who's been very, very productive. I'm not crazy about Linwood as a pro prospect at this point, but they got to be feeling pretty good. So I'll be interested to see if Coleman decides to enter.
But he's had such a prolific year.
No question.
His stock may not be any higher than it is now. So certainly the allure of chasing the national championship, staying for another year in college, but possibly, and I don't know where he would rank. I mean, he will be one of the top receiver prospects. So you figure that's first round.
You would think,
guaranteed money.
That's going to be the question.
All right, next one, staying in the Big 12, you mentioned Oklahoma. They made a bold statement for its college football playoff hopes with a 58-23 win over Oklahoma State, a team that started 10-0 and now has lost two straight games.
Yeah, Oklahoma, and look, they're getting great quarterback play right now, and that's been a big part of their success. Baker Mayfield is playing at a very, very high level. I love the receiver, Sterling Shepard, and he's a guy that stood out to me every single time I've watched him. To me, just comes off as the prototypical slot receiver. And what's funny is I was actually talking about this the other day with somebody where I was not a big Tyler Lockett guy last year coming out of Kansas State. I had some questions about him. I think he
played
pretty
well. So why were you not a big fan?
You know, a lot of people thought he was a great route runner. I thought he had the ability to be great, but I didn't see a guy that was consistently good at some of the little things as a route runner. There were times, yeah, he executed double moves great and just, you know, was able to break defenders' ankles that way. But I didn't see a guy, oh yeah, if he's going to run, you know, a deep dig that was going to consistently, you know, hit it with good technique, a guy that changed up his stride length early on in the down to try and see if he can gain separation that way. I didn't consistently see that from Lockett. I see some of those things from Shepard. And I see great hands. I see a guy that can win after the catch. I see a guy that can go up and win at the highest point, even though he's not the biggest receiver. A guy that's really, really impressive. He reminds me of Tyler Lockett when I watch him, but I like Shepard more. I'm a big fan of Shepard.
Are you scared? Not scared. That's not the right word. Are you nervous to now cloud your future evaluations of players saying, I missed on Tyler Lockett, so here's why? And maybe I guess it's something you learn from in the evaluation process.
Sure. But I wouldn't say that affects it too much. That's a good point, though. Maybe in the back of my mind, that creeps in.
It's a process question.
It's a process
great
question.
Great process
no
question.
Question.
All right. Florida State, Florida.
This is dramatic.
I know.
See, we have BT in the house now. Now we're starting to ramp it up.
Songs, the drops, and everything, of course. Florida State routed the Gators 27-2. I mean, obviously you'd want to talk about Dalvin Cook, but he's a true sophomore.
Yeah. No
183
question.
Yards, two touchdowns. Florida is playing in the SEC title game, so they can still play spoiler to Alabama's hopes for a playoff spot. But Florida State, Florida, the Seminoles crushing the Gators.
Yeah, and I think that really if you're going to talk about who the best player overall in that game was, I would say it was Florida State corner Jalen Ramsey, a guy that I have really, really loved since the first time I watched him last year against Miami, where he made a number of different plays. He played that star position in that defense a year ago where he played as a safety and base, came down and played in the nickel, played inside, outside, over the tackle as an edge rusher, you know, played just all over the field and made a number of different plays. He's a great athlete. He shows natural ball skills. He's physical against the run. I think he's the total package. He's got great size for an outside corner. I'm really, really excited to watch this kid even more this year. We'll see if he does declare for the NFL draft. But a guy that's got all the physical tools you want. I think that, to me, when I watch him, I see no question he's an NFL corner. Some have questioned whether or not they think he's an NFL corner. Some say, okay, well, he could be, you know, a nice corner, or he could be Eric Berry and be an outstanding safety. So we'll see.
It's not a bad thing there.
No,
so.
Exactly. To me, I see a top-shelf NFL corner, and I'm excited to see Ramsey more. To me, he's the best player in that game.
I've been Googling for the last few seconds, what was the name of that Fallout Boy song that was the theme song or the every time that ESPN went to commercial during the college football playoff last year?
That was, what do you call it? The, we play it. We play it at LFF all the time. It's the...
Immortal.
Yes.
It was the Immortal song. But it's like, that was like, you heard that song so many times that was like, is there another song that...
I mean, it's not a bad song.
I like the song a lot, yes.
Could be worse.
But still. going back to the corners there, do you like Ramsey or Vernon Hargraves of Florida more?
I like Ramsey much more, without question. So I know that was a question that was asked on Twitter.
That's why I figured, you know, to bring it out
of
way,
might as well. I like I said, I think Ramsey is a top 10 pick as a corner. To me, he brings the complete package. So I think Hargreaves is a good player, no question about it. Has the quickness, has the ball skills, is instinctive, a little bit undersized, and that'll be the knock on him. So I'm excited to see what his real measurement is when he does check in at the combine, if he does declare for the draft.
Ramsey was number 5. Hargreaves was number 6 on Mel Kiper's most recent.
Interesting.
So
right. We'll see. I don't know how many corners have gone in the first round that have been below 5'11", we'll say, in the last
Jason
couple of
Barrett.
Years. Yeah, and that
He's
might be the only one.
Only one that comes to mind, exactly.
And I don't think that was a year where there were a ton of – there was Justin Gilbert, right? That was the Gilbert
the
year.
Bradley Roby,
right?
Yeah.
And Roby would have been a higher pick if not for off-field, I think. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a tough – that's
you got to be special.
You
got to
be special. And that's the case
that's
with anything. But anytime you're undersized to your position, you've got to bring extraordinary traits in some of the other areas to kind of make up for it.
All right, the last game we're going to touch on, the Egg Bowl. Ole Miss scored 21 first-quarter points in a 38-27 victory over Mississippi State. A lot of people wonder about the pro prospects of Dak Prescott, you know, Heisman Trophy candidate coming into the season. He was sacked 6 times in the loss.
Yep, and that's my number one issue with Prescott is a guy that holds on to the ball a little bit too long. And you know, a lot of the things you say about Prescott, you could have said a year ago about Brett Hundley. There was a lot more buzz at this point last year about Hundley than I would say there is about Prescott. But he's got a good arm. He's mobile. He's a good kid. He does a lot of the, you know, does everything right off the field. He's got a quick release. There are a lot of things you can like about Dak Prescott. But ultimately, I think what you've got is a day 3 developmental type player. The question is that Brett Hundley was a 6th-round pick last year in a quarterback class that wasn't very deep. This quarterback class. I'm being 100%. This is 100% truth, right? Coming out, this is a hot take. This might be my hot take of the day. This is the deepest quarterback class, and I'd have to go back and look. Definitely since I can remember, in terms of like 1 through, we'll say 14. This is probably. I mean, there are a number of different guys that you can point at.
In 2012, you go back to Luck, RG3,
I think it's
and
deep,
just look at the other guys who
I
came out.
I think it's
of
deeper,
it.
Again, because to me, there you can point to so many different guys, and we'll see which juniors declare. So we'll see what juniors decide to come out. But you can point to so many different players and say, yep, that guy's – and he might, you know, you might not say, oh, yeah, he's a top 10 pick. But you can say, yep, I could see a team taking him in the 2nd or 3rd round, or I could see him taking – you know, and he's a legitimate – 4th or 5th round guy they try and develop, because there have been guys that have gotten drafted in day 3 the past few years where I think it was more like, hey, there's not really anybody else out there. We need a quarterback. Like, we got to bring this guy in. You know, you talk about a guy like Kevin Hogan. You can talk about a guy like Cody Kessler. There's the kid from Western Kentucky. There's the Liberty kid. I mean, there's a ton of quarterbacks out there that a lot of people are really high on. So we'll see.
Okay. I was going to say the Liberty one. People are, there we go. Thank you, B2.
There it is.
Oh, it's not Immortals. No, I know the one I'm thinking of.
It's called Centuries.
Centuries, yes. Centuries.
I looked up Immortals. I'm like, this isn't the song.
No,
every time they go to break, this is the song they would have every single time. So once you said that, I was like, I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, but definitely not Immortals. My apologies on that. So Immortals was in the Big Hero 6 movie.
Okay.
Disney movie, so there which is go. Why I was kind of like, I don't think the two were together, but that's what I was going with at the point. So I just went with it. You know what? If you're going to be wrong, you're just going to be wrong 100%. You're just going to go with
it. You got to ride
so,
it.
Thank you very Own much, it. BT, for saving me there. And that's going to do it for the Draft Buzz segment here of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. It's time now for Pick 6.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, so since we were talking about quarterbacks at the end of the last segment, I might as well start here with the quarterback position. So for pick six this week, we are picking six players who are going to be featured in conference championship weekend. And I really don't want to give this guy any credit after the game-winning drive that he led the Stanford Cardinal on Saturday night. But Kevin Hogan, senior quarterback, struggled early in the season, but you know, by all accounts, it was his best performance of his career against Notre Dame. And you know, at the end of the game, 30 seconds left, they need a field goal to win. He was able to lead them down the field.
You know, every time we watch Kevin Hogan, and look, he doesn't have a great arm. His release is all kinds of jacked up. I mean, his throwing mechanics will probably need some tweaking. If you think that kind of thing can be fixed, I don't know. That's a good question. But when you watch him, he does some things every single time that make me think, wow, that's an NFL type play. And it's not because he makes this great throw from, you know, a 25-yard dart from the opposite hash, you know, on an outbreaking route. It's more, I'll go back to, look, they're playing USC this week in the Pac-12 title. You go back to the when these two teams played earlier in the year. It was late in the game. It was early fourth quarter. Stanford was up by 3 points. They're down in the red zone. He comes to the line of scrimmage, and he sees, hey, the outside linebacker is lined up over the tight end flexed in the slot. But he's shaded a little bit inside, and there's a safety stack behind him. He reads that it's going to be a pressure, goes to the line of scrimmage, changes up the protection to pick up the blitz, takes the snap, drops back, hits that tight end on a crossing route, and almost scores a touchdown. Those are the kind of plays where, wow, that's a great pre-snap read by Hogan, where he saw the pressure. It was a pro-style defense. He said, okay, this is exactly what they're getting ready to do. Let's change the protection up. They block it up. Perfectly executed by Hogan. And that's the kind of thing where a team's going to see and say, this guy's not going to be, you know, a number one starting quarterback, but why not bring this guy in to try and be a backup? I think this guy's got an NFL future in that kind of a role. And Hogan really, really impressed me in that game. Anytime I've watched him, he makes plays like that. He moves pretty well in the pocket. He throws with anticipation. He does a lot of those little things really well. Really impressed with Hogan from that respect.
All right, the Cardinal, they clashed with USC, a team that will not be coached by Chip Kelly anytime in the near future.
No.
For the Pac-12 championship. Second player, you know, we're not going quarterback here. This team is quarterbacked by Connor Cook, one of the prospects who we talked about. But how about his go-to target senior receiver, Aaron Burbridge, who has 75 catches, 1,158 yards, and 7 touchdowns in the Big Ten Championship showdown between undefeated Iowa and the Michigan State Spartans.
I know this is one of Brian Thomas's favorite players in the NFL draft.
I don't mean to chime in, but that play he made
Penn State.
Yeah,
I know. That was something, huh?
Unbelievable.
Great balance. Great yard after catch. But I mean, look,
Burbridge. Sparty.
Every single time that I've watched Burbridge, I've been really, really impressed because he's not an A-plus athlete, but a very good route runner, very strong hands, good after the catch, does a lot of little things well. Every time I've watched him, he's reminded me a bit of Anquan Boldin just because he's kind of got that savvy ability over the middle of the field, can make plays like that where you wouldn't expect an Anquan Boldin to make a play like that. And Burbridge does it week in, week out. He's been very, very productive, really has come out of nowhere for Michigan State this year and has been a very big playmaker. He's going to get matched up this week against an Iowa corner in Desmond King, who is a junior, doesn't really get a ton of love nationally, but Desmond King is one of the top underclassmen at the position. Very excited for that matchup. Might be one of my top matchups, I would say, one-on-one for this coming weekend.
Ooh, will we see it in our Saturday schedule? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to use it for the, you know, college football draft podcast?
It's the college draft podcast with myself,
Ross Tucker.
I will probably use it for both. So there you go.
Look at that. Let's go to the SEC championship game. Florida against Alabama. And this is a player, speaking of the College Draft Podcast, apologies for botching the name.
It's all right.
I was listening, this past week's episode was very good with
Thank
Mike
you.
Mayock on. And you asked about which of the Alabama players on defense stands out to you, and he goes Reggie Ragland. And yeah. I could just tell that instantly you just perked up and were like, ooh, I really like him.
I love Ragland.
Yeah.
I think he's the total package at linebacker. He's athletic. He's physical. He can come downhill. He's instinctive. Does everything you want from an intangible standpoint. He's a great leader off the field. Everything, if you read everything, all the reports. I'm really, really excited about what that kid can be. I think that he should be a first-round pick and one of the first linebackers taken. Ragland, to me, is the total package. Again, he can defend the run. I think some have questioned his abilities to play in man coverage, but we'll see. I'm excited to see Ragland. I really, really hope he goes down to the Senior Bowl and decides to play.
All right, now we'll stay in that matchup. We'll go to the Florida defensive line and Jonathan Bullard, a player who you've been bullish on in the past.
Probably, I would say that Bullard has been my favorite player on the Florida team this year and going back to last year, just because he's a great run defender. I think he's special because he's got the ability to be effective in both a one-gap scheme and a two-gap scheme. You know, he's got the ability to penetrate in the opposing backfield. He can hold up at the point of attack as a two-gapping defensive end. They play him inside a three technique and a nose tackle, and then other times he'll play as a two-point end off the edge. So very excited about his positional versatility. I think he can end up being pretty effective, really, for any kind of scheme that he goes to the next level. So I'm excited about Bullard.
I was about to say, we had no background music for a second. It was weird. Do you get like used to it like throughout the course of the show?
It's been a bit of an adjustment. I'm coachable, though, so I can work through it.
Bullard has, by the way, 15.5 tackles for loss this year. We'll go into Fran's backyard, the Temple Owls, playing in the ACT title game against Houston. And you didn't want to give any love to the Owls. You instead
we've got a good amount of love for the Owls.
I know. You wanted to feature William Jackson III, cornerback with 3 picks on the year. 2 of them have been returned for touchdowns.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. Some people are talking about Jackson as a potential sleeper, as a first-round pick, you know, as a guy that could sneak into the back end of round one. So I was excited to watch him. And so I turned it on earlier in this year. I want to say I watched him against Louisville. And I came away wanting a lot more. I didn't see the athleticism. I didn't see the instincts. I didn't see the physicality or the technique. I do want to watch. It was only one game, so I do want to watch more, and I'm opening myself up to changing my mind potentially. But he is going to the Senior Bowl, so I'll get to see him in person. I'll say, though, that I wasn't overly impressed. He's a big kid and has some potential from that respect, but he's got a big matchup this week. Robbie Anderson, and they've had a lot of production as well on the other side from Bryant, the true freshman receiver. So I think that he's going to have a big matchup on his hands this week against Temple. It'll be a good opportunity for him to shine in this conference title game. I want to see more out of Jackson, though.
All right, I guess you could say we're saving the best for last. Clemson, the Tigers, enter the weekend number 1 in the college football playoff rankings. They play North Carolina in the ACC championship game. How about defensive end Shaq Lawson, 8.5 sacks, 20.5 tackles for loss in 2015?
He's been ridiculously disruptive. A guy that every time I've watched him, I've come away very, very impressed. You know, I'm not ready to say necessarily that he's a top 20 pick, but he uses his hands really well. He's able to hold up at the point of attack. He's not like Vic Beasley. You know, Vic Beasley was 220 pounds, showed the ability to bend the corner and turn the edge, can rush the passer and do a lot of different things from a movement standpoint. But this kid is 6'3", 275 pounds, shows the ability to hold up at the point of attack, can do a lot of different things that Beasley couldn't do. So I'm excited to see how high he ultimately gets drafted.
All right, that's going to do it for our Pick Six segment, featuring players who are playing in the conference championship games this weekend. So speaking of last but not least, it's going to be time for your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
Last but not least, here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA Draft Mailbag, your questions. And our first one comes from good friend of ours on Twitter. Basically, he's asking that there are a lot of systems, offensive systems, that make it difficult to evaluate players. You know, we talked about Baylor and Corey Coleman earlier in the program. Is there a similar type of analogy for defense, or a defensive scheme, or teams that are tougher to evaluate for the next level? The first one that comes to mind for me would be Alabama, to me.
Well, here's the thing, is that part of it is that not necessarily the defensive scheme on a week-to-week basis, but more so how do those teams defend those spread offenses? So you might see less reps of a guy, you know, pressed against the tight end. You know, if you're watching a safety and you're like, oh, well, I gotta try and find a play where he's pressed up against the tight end, I don't really see many. Or, you know, there's just different examples of that. But I'll say one scheme defensively that's kind of tough is
TCU, they like to play a lot where you have this big nickel. And almost, and really, you can see it. Here's a perfect example. Duke, they have Jeremy Cash, okay, who's the safety from, who's been very, very productive. I think he plays the spur or the star, whatever the name of the position is that he plays down there. The striker, that's what he is. He's the strike defender, okay? And it's almost like a big nickel. They play with four down linemen, two linebackers, and then he's that big nickel defender, almost plays like a linebacker. And a lot of people are saying, man, this kid is so productive. He's so great against the run, and they play him over the slot, and he can do everything you want. Just because they use him that way doesn't mean that that's what he's going to be able to do that at the next level. And that's going to be my big question, watching him moving forward as we get through this draft process. Because every time I've watched him, whether it was last year as a junior or this year as a senior, even though they use him that way, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what he will be at the next level. Because I saw a guy that was kind of questionable in terms of his quickness, questionable in terms of his instincts. Look, he's really, really good against the run, uses his hands well, can hold up at the point of attack, and knows how to set the edge and do things that way. But, we're talking about a safety, a guy that's going to be able to do that. He doesn't play single high. He doesn't play in the two shell. So he's going to have to learn how to do those things if he's going to stay at the safety position. And he's not playing in the slot. I mean, he's not Malcolm Jenkins. That's not the kind of athlete he is. So he's either going to have to commit to being a linebacker, and that's what he's going to be, or he's going to have to learn how to play the safety position on the back end. That's going to be a translation. So it's things like that. And we saw it in the past. There was the kid Deion Bailey from mm-hmm. USC, who played a similar type role. We're going to say the same thing about Sua Cravens from USC this year, plays a similar type role. And what are the questions? Sua Cravens, everybody calls him a linebacker. Nobody calls Jeremy Cash a linebacker. Everyone calls him a safety. So those are the type of systems really where you're trying to evaluate just that one position. And I would say that when you talk to the Greg Cosells and the Daniel Jeremiahs of the world, the Mike Mayocks, they'll say that the hardest position to evaluate, and you obviously kind of, let's say you remove quarterback, is safety. And some will say that it's safety over quarterback because, it's so hard to try and find, plays that are easily translatable to the next level just because of how offenses play and then how defenses are forced to deploy those players. It's very, very hard to try and find enough. So whereas, some guys you have to watch, let's say for a normal player in any other position, you want to watch 3 to 4 games. A lot of guys will have to watch 7-8 games for a safety just to get the same amount of translatable reps, when you're doing your tape study.
The reason Alabama, specifically the secondary, came to mind is because in recent years you've seen a lot of their players go high in the draft and not have the success in the NFL. I mean, they're obviously very well coached. It's almost pro-style coaching they're getting at the college level, but do they kind of peak too early, hit their ceiling, go into the NFL, and then, they might be ahead going into the NFL, but they don't make any further developments?
Yeah, I guess that would be more of a culture or just the way that the team is built, not necessarily the X's, the scheme of what they're playing.
Exactly,
what they're asking,
yes.
That's why everyone loved Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, because it was like, oh, yep, here he is playing the slot. Here he is playing single high. Here he is playing two shell. Here he is playing underneath coverage in zone. Like, you can see, okay, this is easily translatable. You can see it's apples to apples. Whereas, when you're watching Jeremy Cash, it's apples to oranges. It's the complete, he can't do what he's doing right now at the NFL level, at least in my opinion. So very interesting to watch.
BT?
Well, what do you think sometimes those systems, and you hit my point, just hide there, maybe they're not NFL talent, or maybe they're not ready for the next level, but they're playing in these really, these NFL schemes, getting NFL coaching, like C-Mac said, and it's hiding their skill level.
Well, that's what Greg Cosell said a lot last year when talking about Landon Collins. And he said, coaches tell you what they think a player can or cannot do
by where they put him.
And Landon Collins very often was the dime linebacker for that reason. I mean, he came down and he played, in essence, he played the linebacker position because when they were on dime and teams were trying to spread them out, Nick Saban didn't want Landon Collins playing out in space. He wanted him close to the line of scrimmage, and he would play man-to-man at times on tight ends or on running backs because they didn't want him playing against slot receivers, and they didn't want him playing on the deep end of the field. I mean, they wanted him close to the line of scrimmage against lesser athletes or just to help defend against the run.
I've had that same question where the D. Milners, the Dre Kirkpatricks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see these guys getting drafted first round, and but you haven't seen it translate to the next level. So Alabama came to my mind immediately when you asked that question.
Yeah, I think that there are just defenses where, okay, if I'm watching offensive players,
and I want to, and I look at their schedule and I say, okay, who are the pro style defenses? I'd much rather watch them against pro style defenses because I can see, okay, these are this is easily translatable. So if a guy's got if a receiver's got Clemson on the schedule, oh well, Clemson they play. I know every year they play a ton of press man, and that's something that he's going to see a lot at the next level. So I want to watch. They play Alabama. Oh, there's a lot of NFL concepts there. Michigan now they play a ton of NFL concepts there on defense. So those are the kind of things you try and look for because it's easier to then translate.
All right. Speaking of particular prospects on defense, OSnapU on Twitter wants to know about Robert Kimdichie from Ole Miss. Could be a potential number one overall pick in the upcoming draft. OSnapU's thoughts are that he flashes every now and then, but seems to take a lot of plays off.
Yeah, you know, I've studied him from his sophomore year, and I've watched a game or two this year. And he has gotten better this year. You know, I think that last year, my big question with him was, can he hold up against the run? Because there were times I remember against LSU where he was getting pushed off the ball. Lyle Collins got him a couple times. Vidal Alexander got him a couple times where they were able to move him off his spot and remove him in the running game. And that would be an issue at the next level. I think he's gotten a little bit better. And I think that Alabama game, he really, really flashed. And I can't wait to study it even further because he was just watching the game on TV. You could just see how disruptive he was and, you know, how active he was. But the ability to hold up at the point of attack, you could see that he had improved there. So, you know, I'm not going to say that he takes a lot of plays off. I do want to watch more of him. And I know that he played a lot for them. You know, and sometimes he'll play three. Sometimes he'll line up out at defensive end. He'll play him, in nose tackle and some sub packages. They play him on offense, you know, to chagrin, you know, sometimes because he got a concussion against Memphis because he was a lead fullback on a play. That's a whole separate discussion. But, you know, for a guy that plays both ways for a good chunk of the game, there are going to be some times where he does take some plays off as well. So we'll see.
Have you done your initial D-line rankings?
I've started to a little bit. The guys that I've watched, I feel like I've got a pretty good feel. You know, especially this senior class, there are a lot of talented defensive linemen. And when you factor in the juniors, it's a really good group. And I'm going to forget some guys. But, you know, you've got DeForest Buckner. You've got Kenny Clark from UCLA. You've got Austin Johnson from Penn State, A'shaun Robinson and Jerron Reed from Alabama.
So where does Kimdichie fall?
Kimdichie, I think, because now you're talking the different positions. In terms of a pure three technique, Kimdichie's probably the best. Okay. You know, and the rest of those guys aren't potential, like, oh yeah, quick off the ball, winning one gap and penetrating the backfield. That's not some of these other guys' games. DeForest Buckner's not that. Kenny Clark's not that. A lot of people love Andrew Billings from Baylor, and the one I've only done one game. The one game I watched, I didn't see it, so I do want to watch more.
Can't just judge one game.
Oh, so I know exactly. Well, he's a junior. He's a junior, so I'm not going to put too much effort into him until he's declared. So,
all right. The last one comes from @Matt Grumbrecht on Twitter. Pretty much has a scenario for the Eagles.
All right.
Right now, the Eagles, if the draft was today based on record, they would have the number 8 overall pick. So at number 8, if it's Paxton Lynch is on the board or if Ronnie Stanley, the tackle from Notre Dame, is on the board, which way would the Eagles go? And before I'll give the floor to you, certainly I haven't watched Paxton Lynch in anything from an in-depth perspective to really have a good grasp of him. Obviously, he's put up outstanding numbers. He's led Memphis to a great season. If he is deemed to be a potential fit to be the guy for the Eagles, certainly I think you go that direction. We still have to figure out what Sam Bradford's going to be these last 5 games. You know, I was just filming 360 with Dave Spadaro earlier, and the biggest thing is these last 5 games, you want to see Bradford play just to get a better evaluation because you have to make a decision on him at the end of the season, you know?
He's going to be a free agent, no question.
So you got to decide from that standpoint. If they feel that Lynch can be the guy, sure. That's fine. But obviously, the other big question mark is going to be, how do you fix the offensive line? And I think Stanley would be a very good fit from what I've seen in that role as well.
Yep.
So
the one thing I'll say, too, about the quarterback position, obviously, if you don't have one, you always take one. But the other thing, especially at this stage, the quarterback, more than any other position, ultimately comes down to not just the on-field and what a guy can do on the field, but also the comfort that coaches and general managers have off the field and owners have off the field, because
We've seen talented quarterbacks drop because the, you know, not necessarily because on field. Look, I thought Zach Mettenberger was one of the top, and he was, no question, and that's kind of held true. I think that he's if Zach Mettenberger had gone in the second round instead of the sixth, I don't know that the Titans would have drafted Marcus Mariota, because they would have, everyone would have said it would have been like Derek Carr. Everyone would have said, oh man, they just had a talented second round pick that started 10 games for them and played pretty well. How can they do that? I thought Zach Mettenberger was that kind of a talent, and I think a lot of people thought that he was that kind of a talent. And he fell because, you know, he had the injury, and also there were some off-field issues. You know, I think that all the, and Teddy Bridgewater, same deal. Everyone thought he was a first round, you know, number one pick, no question. He's the number one, Teddy Bridgewater, number one pick, fell because, you know, a lot of people, there was the pro day, and, you know, people kind of questioned his physical ability, but then also, you know, everyone, you heard all the rumors about, oh, you know, he's kind of quiet. He's, yeah, he's introverted. You know, is he that guy's going to be a rah-rah, you know, lead the team kind of guy? Quarterback is very much about the comfort that coaches have, that GMs have, that owners have with those players. So that's why we can talk about Jared Goff and what his skill set is. We can talk about Paxton Lynch and Christian Hackenberg and Connor Cook and all these guys. Ultimately, until these teams start meeting with those guys, that's why even a guy like Carson Wentz, no one is really talking about Carson Wentz right now. Carson Wentz could go to the Senior Bowl and he's going to end up being a first-round pick, and no one's talking about him. Or he could end up being, you know, he could go and teams might be turned off and he might be a third or fourth round pick. So I'm intrigued to see what happens here with the quarterback class, because I think there are a lot of guys, like I said, that have a lot of talent. But I think once these teams start getting involved, and now you have the team scouts, the area scouts that have been in there, they all have a good idea. But now once the meetings start and you start having one-on-ones, you know, now the Adam Kaplans and the Albert Breers and the Ian Rappaports, we'll start getting a sense of what the narrative is on all these guys.
Well, you get the agents involved too.
No question. You know, and that's such a big part of it. So we'll get a sense of how teams feel about these guys moving forward.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us here on this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Thank you so much for your questions. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure to rate and comment. Let us know what you want to hear on future editions. We're starting to get into that part where, look, it's going to be all-star game season soon enough. You're going to get into combine. I mean, we are going to get into the mix of this really, really soon. So thank you very much for joining the ride early, and it's only going to get better from here. For producer Brian Thomas behind the scenes, for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Thanks again. You've been listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.